So the IDOT studies were basically all of the data is collected at the agency level. So each agency collects information on time and date of stop, some of them on beat location, which means the areas of the city in which it's the stop occurs, the make and model of the car, the race, gender, and age of the driver, and a few other things as well, whether there was a stop, or sorry, whether there was a search, whether there was a dog search, whether they found any contraband, any of that stuff. So all this information has been out there since starting with 2004. And the study originally came up at the behest of some black legislators from Chicagoland who basically said, we've seen a trend of African Americans being stopped more than white drivers in proportion to their population. So they said, let's get some hard numbers on this, some hard data on this, so that we can, make some policy changes or whatever needs to happen. So we've been doing this for a decade now. Actually, 2014 will be the 10-year anniversary of the original year there. The 2013 numbers just came out, and I haven't had a chance to parse those as much as the previous numbers. But in general, Springfield holds true with the majority of other agencies in the state. Black folks are pulled over more often for their population proportion than white drivers. And essentially, that means in Springfield, there are about the driving population is about 20% African American, but African Americans make up 40 some odd percent of the traffic stops.
During the course of your reporting, you met Samuel Johnson of Springfield, who says he was illegally stopped in November of last year simply because of his skin color. Tell us a little bit more about him.
He is a I'm not sure exactly his age, but he's about 30-ish. He used to own a nightclub here in town, and he said, when I was doing that, I kind of got a taste of what he, what essentially a lot of people refer to as institutional racism. It's not so much someone saying, I don't like black people or something like that. It's more a system that is set up to give preference to white people over black people. And so he saw a lot of that when he was running his nightclub, and that eventually folded. And he said, I had to get, kind of start over. So he kind of got a passion for social justice through that experience. And so when he was pulled over, if you look at the dashboard camera on the police cruiser, there are a few subtle hints that the cruiser kind of catches up to him specifically. Like when they come up the ramp, on the off ramp of the highway, they're kind of cutting corners off of the curves, and it, they're rapidly catching up to him. And so he feels like he was targeted based on his skin color and the condition of his car, which, he feels like are stereotypical reasons for stopping someone. What ended up happening in his case was that the police pulled him over for not signaling 100 feet before he changed lanes. It turns out that state law actually doesn't have a requirement for how long you have to use your turn signal before you change lanes. And now he is he's mulling a federal civil rights lawsuit based on that stop.
And what is he doing to try and combat what's known as racial profiling? I take it this potential court case that he's pursuing would be one avenue.
And really, I think he's kind of turning into an organizer in his community, of saying, folks, we need to get together on this issue, and instead of just accepting whatever plea deals they give you in traffic court, start fighting back, look into the details of the law and the case, and what the police responsibilities and rights are, and what your responsibilities and rights are. Basically, kind of trying to urge people to get more educated about their rights and responsibilities on the road, in, in any encounter with the police.
And so you mentioned in your story that racial profiling is a controversial notion, that police officers stop, search, arrest, and generally treat people of certain ethnicities or races more poorly than they do others. What makes this notion controversial? Why isn't this just a fact?
If you look at the numbers, obviously you can see that that does happen, that police have more contact with black folks proportionally than they do with white folks. And the reason it's controversial is that the police say, yes, that might actually happen, but there are reasons for that. Like we stop more people in high crime neighborhoods. We stop people in more in areas that have more police calls, calls to police for service. And so it ends up being controversial in that the police feel like they're being, I guess, unduly labeled as racist when they feel like they're just doing their job.
You're listening to WUIS. I'm Rachel Otwell speaking with Patrick Yeagle, a reporter for the Illinois Times. His recent feature article was about Black drivers being targeted for traffic stops. And Patrick, as you just mentioned, Springfield's deputy police chief seems to give you a pretty simple answer as to why a disproportionate number of Black drivers are pulled over.
Deputy Chief Arnold was very polite about this, and I could tell that he was a little bit miffed at the assertion that, you know, Springfield police treat Black drivers differently than white drivers. Essentially, he brought up some numbers that he had his secretary run of all of the calls to police by the beat area in the last 5 years, and what it showed is basically that the areas that have the most traffic stops also have the most calls to police, which he uses as an explanation of saying these areas have the most calls to police. And then he also dissected those numbers a bit further into violent crime and drugs. So you can see that the areas with the most stops also had the most calls for violent crime and drugs from citizens, of course. And so he says those areas are obviously the ones where we need to concentrate our manpower because that's where the most crime is. And so he says, of course, we're going to have more stops and interaction with people of color in those neighborhoods because that's where people of color live, you know, and we're in those neighborhoods more. So that was his assertion. And the primary character in my story, Samuel Johnson, agrees with that. And he understands that. But he sees it from a more big picture view of, is that the appropriate response to crime versus dealing with the intrinsic problems in those communities?
American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, had a report that recently came out that said police in Illinois are 2 times more likely to ask Black and Latino people to consent to searches during traffic stops than they are to ask white people to consent to searches. How does this relate to your story?
It's kind of another side issue to this story because this story really is just mostly about traffic stops. But there is, in the Samuel Johnson stop, there actually was a search that he contends was illegal. And that's kind of a separate issue that I didn't really get into too much in this because it's there's a lot of other stuff that goes into that. When you look at the issues of, you know, searches, and especially when you take into account dog searches and whether they find things. I wrote a previous story about traffic stops in which dogs are used to sniff for drugs. And what I found out after my original story is that the police really feel like those numbers are misleading because there's a lot of other factors that go into whether or not a search finds things, especially relating to dog searches. And so the issue of stopping to search people, it ends up kind of going hand in hand with the stop data itself, because of course you're going to have more searches when you end up stopping a particular group more often. It kind of feeds into the same issue of it may not be specifically racist, but the outcome ends up being racist because more Black folks and people, you know, of other ethnicities, those folks end up getting pulled over, searched more often than their white counterparts.
It's disproportionate to the population.
Exactly.
And you had mentioned that you found out that white people are actually more likely to have contraband on their person during these searches than those who might be Latino or Black.
Right. It's not a significant difference. I think it's something like 13% to 11% in favor of whites more often having contraband. So it's not a very significant percentage, and I wish I knew the numbers off the top of my head, but it actually kind of reverses the notion that if you pull over a group that you suspect commits more crimes, as a police officer, obviously I'm speaking from that perspective. If you pull over a group that, as a police officer, you suspect commits more crimes, then you would expect to find more contraband in that, you know, environment. It actually turns out that white folks end up having more contraband per capita, you know, in the white population than Black folks. And it kind of reverses the trend or the overarching, I guess, stereotype or whatever you'd call it.
With the recent situation in Ferguson, Missouri, where an unarmed Black teenager was gunned down by police, I'm curious, do you feel the issues that are being brought up as a result of this resonate at all with the findings of your report?
Absolutely. This all kind of resonates with me because I'm looking at numbers that show Black drivers are pulled over more often. Black drivers are searched more often for their population proportion. There's a common thread here of what a lot of folks call institutional racism, and that's not someone being treated differently specifically because they're Black. You know, a white officer, for example, treating a black person differently because they're black. It ends up not being the real problem. It ends up being more that rules and regulations and stuff like that is either enforced more often against black folks than white folks, or ends up being more preferential toward white folks than black folks. And you see this in so many areas of life, you know, whether it's housing or voting rights or any number of other things, that there's what's called white privilege, in which a white person doesn't really even have to think about this issue of, you know, am I going to get turned down for renting an apartment because, you know, I'm white, I don't really see that problem. A black person might go into the same apartment complex and have to wonder, are they going to turn me down because I'm black and they have a stereotype of me being a troublemaker or something like that? And so you see this in so many areas of life that honestly, white folks don't really have to think about, and we don't have to deal with it on a daily basis. It's a very sticky thing because a lot of people resent that notion. A lot of white folks resent that notion that, you know, we're privileged more than some other race. But basically being a matter of how closely are you looking and how much are you listening to your black counterparts? You know, have you had the same experience that they've had? Probably not. And the problem that a lot of black folks run into is, you know, I'm seeing these problems firsthand, and when I talk about this with white folks, they don't want to listen because they get offended. And so we never really end up having that honest dialogue that really needs to happen about race.
What was the big takeaway from this report, the study, but also the people you talked to?
We need to have an open, honest conversation about race and about the institutions of our society that black folks feel like they're targeted more by. If there's an issue of white privilege in some area, or if there's an issue of, you know, black folks being treated differently than white folks, that really needs to be addressed. And for us, you know, for us white folks, we need to hold back our opinions for a minute, listen to what our black counterparts have to say, and really take into account, if this is a new situation for me, if this is something I'm just now learning about, maybe there's a reason for it. Maybe that experience that that black folks have been having is real, and maybe I need to listen before I give my opinion about it.